Hello, and welcome to Technically Baltimore, The Look Ahead. I'm Dante Kirby, reporter with Technically, and in this series, we're exploring the theme of the new normal and discussing the lessons we've learned in 2020. And today, my guest is Ashley Greenspan,
I'm the public affairs manager for the East area at Crown Castle.
Yes, thank you. But just to hop right into it, I guess, can you explain a little bit what Crown Castle does and what it means to create telecom infrastructure and how that differs from being an internet service provider?
Of course, and thank you so much for the opportunity. Really appreciate it. So as a builder of shared communications infrastructure, what that means is that we partner with wireless carriers, businesses, governments, and communities to make sure that they have access to essential data, technology, and wireless service. And we've been doing that for over 25 years. So we work around the country to build and maintain a comprehensive portfolio of communications infrastructure that really makes us the largest provider of shared communications infrastructure in the US. In fact, our network covers over 50% of the population in Baltimore. So that means that whenever you pull out your phone to make a phone call or use an app on your phone or stream music and video, that there's actually a really good chance that you're relying on Crown Castle's network. So what does that network look like? We build towers, which are really the foundation of mobile access. They're designed to send and receive cell signals over a large area. And then there's fiber, which allows for data to move at the speed of light. And then finally, there are small cells, which are really designed to expand the coverage and the capacity of the network. Often they hide in plain sight, installed on infrastructure in the right-of-way, such as utility poles or streetlights. And the real difference between what Crown Castle does and an ISP is that we're a business-to-business company. So we're in the business of building the network in collaboration with our wireless customers in order to make sure that consumers ultimately have reliable access. Whereas an internet service provider is going to provide direct internet services to the consumer. So that's the real difference. Hope that's helpful.
Thank you. And I guess to sort of expand more on what Crown Castle does as like for the community and like as an organization, and talk a bit about how as a private company, it's involved in partnerships with like the Boys and Girls Club to like provide free internet service to bridge the digital divide, or partner with Bite Back for job programs that sort of address like underrepresentation for communities that could use those jobs the most. So like, I guess talk a bit about like why Crown Castle feels it's a priority to do those things.
Of course, thank you. So beyond just connecting communities with our infrastructure, it's also really important for us that we connect with the local communities that we serve. And so, as you pointed out, we do that through our corporate social responsibility program, which is called Connected by Good. And as you've mentioned, we've partnered with the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Baltimore, as well as Bite Back in Montgomery County. And then we've also worked with the Digital Harbor Foundation on their STEM programming. And we have partnerships like that across the country. And most recently, what we're really excited about is that we just launched a partnership with Enoch Pratt Free Library to grow their career in online high school. And so that program will really allow for adults to one, earn a high school diploma, and then also to get a career certificate in a field that's really in high demand. And the reason why we honed in on this program for 2021 is because there are 90,000 residents across the city of Baltimore that don't have a high school diploma. And unfortunately, what we know is that those who don't have a high school diploma are much more likely to live in poverty. And career in online high school is really designed to help address both that career and the education gap. And all of these programs, when you look at them in totality, are really designed to help reinforce our commitment to enabling all of the, you know, interconnections that that help localities and communities to really thrive.
And I guess when we talk about Fortune 500 companies, because a lot of companies over the course of 2020, whether it be the protests for the murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, or again, when the pandemic hit and a lot of people realized that not as many people are connected to the internet as they thought they were, a lot of companies sort of made these promises to do these initiatives and sort of, I guess, be and create programs like Connected by Good. I guess, do you feel Fortune 500 companies are obligated to make initiatives like this? Like, if so, why or why not?
Well, there are some industries, like in banking, where you have the Community Reinvestment Act, which is a national law really designed to encourage banks in particular to meet the needs of local communities. But at Crown Castle, we really do it because we want to. It's not new. We've been doing it for years. And many Fortune 500 companies, both and as well as much smaller companies, really choose to give back. And we're happy to be, you know, in their company. I think, you know, the reason why we're so focused on it is because ultimately the work that we do is local. Infrastructure is local. And partnering with local nonprofits really helps to reinforce our local approach. When we build, we're here to stay. And our model is really built around the long-term investment in communities that we serve. And our philanthropic work is a natural extension of that local approach.
And I guess to talk a bit more about, I guess, like what communities need, or I guess not to frame it that way. I guess as a creator of the telecoms infrastructure, could you talk about like what municipal broadband would mean for the market? Like if the idea that somebody could get internet the same way somebody would get their electricity or gas, you know, could you give me some insight on like what that would mean for ISP or infrastructure creators like Crown Castle?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately what the pandemic did was really brought into stark relief a problem that we already knew existed, right? That there is a massive digital divide in this country. It's estimated that 17 million people across the US lack basic internet access. You and I know how critical it is to have conversations like this, to talk to our doctors, and frankly, so much more, right? And so what we are looking to do is really kind of work with communities to take innovative approaches to address this challenge. So for instance, we have partnered with several nonprofits across the country as part of US Ignite's Project Overcome to really kind of evaluate innovative ways to expand access to underserved and low-income communities. And so the way that it looks is really looking at new technologies like CBRS, which actually makes shared spectrum available to provide high-speed internet at low to no cost. And these projects are being funded by government grants. And I think, you know, fundamentally, as communities really think about how to expand access to all, it's going to be public-private partnerships like these that really allow for local governments to maximize and stretch their dollars. Since Crown Castle doesn't provide direct residential service, those are the types of opportunities that we really look for, is ways that we can partner with local government to build out the fiber networks that are going to be really critical for expanding access.
And I guess to talk more a bit about 2020 for you personally, and now essentially 2021 is over, depending on like how you feel about time. What has 2020 and 2021 taught you personally?
Well, I think I've been really fortunate in that I've been able to spend a lot more time with my family in 2020 and 2021. I'm really grateful for that. It's put a new focus on family for me. And I think, you know, professionally and also personally, one of the things that the pandemic really magnified for me is the role of wireless broadband in addressing the digital divide. I think, you know, policymakers are rightly focused on expanding wireline access. It's incredibly important. But I think that there's a trend that's incredibly important that we not ignore, right? So according to the Pew Research Center, 37% of adults now go online mostly using their smartphone. And low-income communities and communities of color are much more likely to rely exclusively on their smartphone in order to get online. So what that means is we need to make major investments in wireless broadband to make sure that everyone really has the same level of access. And I think that 5G will be really critical in that because it'll be much faster with the ability to connect many more devices. And it'll play a really important role in making sure that underserved communities have the wireless broadband that they need to really participate in the digital economy.
That is an interesting perspective. I don't think I've ever, I guess, heard it framed that way, like put more on like going towards the wireless side instead of, hey, if people like, because the Baltimore figures is like, because they sort of put that in there, like you can go like 40% just disconnected, and then you can, it brings it down a bit when it talks about like, okay, connected and don't have like a computer, tablet, or laptop. And that comes to like around 30%. These are just like me sort of being, I guess, general with the figures. And that could definitely help a lot. I guess as an infrastructure provider, could you talk a bit about like why one is easier to do than the other? Like why, in terms of building out fiber, is not always as cost effective to do that versus something like 5G in like a rural community, or maybe even a city that doesn't have the infrastructure already in place to like to have an ISP come in?
Well, when you're talking about rural communities, that's, I think, a really good example, right? So building out fiber can be incredibly expensive when there isn't a large population to serve, which is what you're going to have in rural areas. And the value of fixed wireless, right? So using towers to deliver wireless service to the home, is that you only have to build the fiber to the tower, right? And then you can broadcast the signal from that tower. And so ultimately, that is a much more cost-effective way to expand broadband to rural communities that need it. Particularly, you know, given the challenges around fiber to the home and the expense there.
And that's when Crown Castle looks at the connectivity issues in city like Baltimore or rural America as an industry expert on creating the infrastructure, like what are the ways to get more people connected? Like what is that industry hurdle that sort of stops all of a given state or all of a given city from being connected?
I think that's a really good question. And I think that, honestly, we can do a better job of working with city and state governments to enact policies that really kind of prepare communities for shovel-ready broadband projects. So for instance, over 30 states across the country have a small cell bill. And that's really designed to streamline the build out of small cells and to make sure that there is consistency when you're within a state. When you don't have that kind of legislation, what you get in as a result is really a hodgepodge of regulations that make it really difficult to invest in broadband. Maryland doesn't have a statewide bill. And so I think, you know, the states that haven't enacted one could benefit from really evaluating the benefits of putting in place a statewide small cell bill. I think the other thing is that like it's really important to remember that all of this wireless broadband actually requires a ton of wires in the form of fiber. And we should be looking at more efficient ways to install that fiber. One way is for counties to consider authorizing micro trenching, which is a construction technique that it tends to be faster and less disruptive than laying fiber in a traditional trench. And then I think the third thing that we kind of can all do in partnership is to work together to dispel misinformation about health impacts from wireless infrastructure, which in some communities is really derailing the promise of innovation and economic growth from 5G. I mean, the consensus among health experts is that radio frequency from wireless infrastructure is safe, and 5G is no different. And so it's really important that we work together to dispel those myths so that we can see the benefits of wireless infrastructure.
I guess two things I'm interested in is just like, could you elaborate more on like what a small cell bill is, just for like us not so, I guess, legislation inclined?
Yeah, of course. So a small cell bill, and there are models from over 30 states, is essentially a law designed to streamline the build out of small cells statewide so that there's consistency between cities and counties. And really what it seeks to do is to streamline the fees associated with the build out of this infrastructure. So kind of creating some consistency around how much a locality can charge an infrastructure provider to install a small cell, as well as the timelines for the installation of that infrastructure.
And I guess, could you talk a bit more about like the pushback from, I guess, misinformation about 5G? Because I mean, I can recall being on the internet and like seeing the occasional thing, like people assume that the pandemic and the coronavirus was caused by 5G at a certain point. And like that sort of went by the wayside. And I haven't personally heard too much about it, but I guess it depends on like, again, if you're in the industry, you see things more often. It's very different than going to the town hall. And like, again, in most cases, the people who have enough energy to show up at a town hall tend to like have very extreme beliefs one way or another. So I guess, could you talk a bit about like what that pushback is and like how a company sort of navigates that when you're getting that kind of, I guess, pushback from a municipality?
Sure. There's a lot of misinformation out there about health impacts from 5G, both on the body and the environment. However, the radio frequency that's actually used for the transmission of cell signals, right? So this is part of the electromagnetic spectrum, has been well studied. And we're actually surrounded by radio frequency all of the time. It's transmitted by your TV remote, by your baby monitor, by your Wi-Fi devices. And it's been studied for decades. And all of the research says that at the levels allowed by the FCC, which regulates the radio frequency emissions from these technologies, that it's safe. However, despite all of that research, there's still a lot of advocacy and pushback spreading misinformation about health impacts from 5G. And so we have been working really hard as an industry with our partners and with, you know, academia, with doctors, to really just share the facts about radio frequency so that counties and governments can really make smart choices when it comes to laws that will enable this technology. And sometimes, you know, it's harder than other times, and sometimes we're unsuccessful or sometimes we get delayed, but we think it's really important to ensure that communities really have all of the information so that they can make smart decisions and really see the benefits of the innovation growth and the GDP growth that comes from wireless networks.
So I guess, is there anything you feel we haven't talked about? Anything you feel people should know about Crown Castle? I guess the infrastructure of broadband and sort of like the industry and the people that are like behind and creating that network that allows us to sort of be connected digitally every day?
That's always a good question. I think, you know, the one thing I would add is that we touched briefly on 5G, but I think that it'll be incredibly transformative, right? We're talking about a technology that will be up to 100 times faster and with the ability to connect 100 times the number of devices compared to the 4G standard. And we're really committed to building out that technology in Baltimore. And just to give you a sense of what it will enable, we're talking about $11 billion in GDP growth and over 34,000 new jobs in Greater Baltimore alone over the next 10 years. And really, it means transformational access to healthcare and remote work and smart city technologies and much more that's on the horizon that we can only kind of begin to imagine. The same way that 4G unlocked so much innovation, 5G will really do the same. And we're looking forward to working with community partners and government partners to really ensure that all residents benefit from the improvements that 5G promises. So that's what's next for us, and we're super excited about it.
So thank you, Ashley, for taking the time to talk with me. And that's been Technically Baltimore's The Look Ahead.
Thanks so much, Michael.
Yes, and until next time, stay connected.